All right, welcome back everybody to the deep dive. You know, we always try to bring you cases that'll like really make you think, and today, well, we've got a fascinating one. It's McCormick v. United States. Came out of the DC Court of Appeals.
Yeah, this one's interesting. It's a bit of a head scratcher. It really gets to the heart of, you know, courtroom procedure and how we think about, you know, respecting the court and also individual rights. So a lot for future litigators to unpack here.
For sure. I mean, think about it. Like, as a lawyer, you're going to be in court all the time. And knowing the line between, you know, proper decorum and when a judge can really, like, drop the hammer on you for contempt. Well, that's crucial stuff.
Absolutely. And for anyone really who's interested in how the legal system tries to balance the need for order with those basic constitutional protections, this is like a masterclass in that tension.
Okay, so let's set the scene. We've got Xavier McCormick. He's at a sentencing hearing for his friend, Emmanuel Quarles, in Judge Walton's courtroom.
Right. So high emotions, already a tense situation.
Exactly. So the judge hands down the sentence. McCormick is upset, obviously. I mean, wouldn't you be?
Of course, yeah.
He leaves with a couple of his friends, makes some, let's say, heated remarks. And then, this is the key part, he turns back and points at the judge. Now remember, this is after the sentencing is done. Like, it's over, officially.
The timing is super important. You know, if this was during the actual sentencing, while the judge was speaking, different story maybe. But here, it's like, is this really disrupting the legal process in the same way? Something to think about.
So they bring McCormick back into the courtroom. And boom, Judge Walton holds an immediate contempt hearing. No notice to McCormick about what specific charges, no chance for him to explain himself or defend his actions, straight to a finding of contempt and a 90-day jail sentence.
Wow. Okay, so that raises the big question, right? Was this the right call? Was summary contempt, like, was that truly warranted in this situation? Or could the court have, you know, taken a different path, a less drastic route?
Yeah, that's the dilemma the DC Court of Appeals had to untangle. And they were looking at two main legal issues. First, did McCormick's behavior, like, did it actually meet the requirements for summary contempt under this rule, Rule 42A? And second, by skipping over notice and a chance to be heard, did the judge violate McCormick's due process rights?
Yeah, it's crucial to understand how Rule 42A is different from 42B. You see, 42A, that's for those extreme situations, right? Where the conduct is so disruptive, so outrageous, that the court has to act instantly to keep things from completely falling apart.
Like someone's throwing a punch.
Exactly. Whereas 42B, that outlines the typical contempt process. You get formal charges, you're notified, you have a hearing. You can defend yourself. It's a more measured approach.
So you've got this tension, right? Judges need authority. We get that. Mm-hmm. They got to be able to maintain order in the courtroom.
Yeah.
But then you have the individual's rights. Everyone deserves a fair shake, legally speaking.
Precisely. And in this instance, the DC Court of Appeals, they decided that due process won out. They reversed the trial court's decision.
Interesting. So break it down for us. What were the key arguments that led to that reversal?
Well, Judge Farron wrote the majority opinion. And he made three really important points. First, he said, yeah, McCormick was angry, he was disrespectful, but his actions didn't create what the law calls an extreme emergency. Remember, the sentencing was over. Nothing was being actively disrupted.
So a pointed finger, even with some harsh words, not exactly the same as, like you said, throwing a punch or screaming during a trial.
Right. The court was pretty clear about that. A single gesture, even if it's angry, that doesn't automatically mean there's this huge threat to the court. Second big point, McCormick was denied those basic due process protections. No notice of the charges, no chance to explain his side of things. The court even pointed out that it wasn't entirely clear what McCormick's gesture meant. Was he pointing aggressively? Was he maybe just waving dismissively? A hearing could have sorted that out.
Makes you think, right? Like, even a quick opportunity to speak up can make a difference, especially when the facts are kind of murky.
Absolutely. And Judge Farron even quoted a previous case saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, but basically, when the facts are important to determining guilt, the person accused of contempt has to have a reasonable chance to explain themselves. So that's a pretty strong statement right there.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so what was the third point?
Yes. The court said Judge Walton had other options, less drastic ones. Maybe call a short recess, let things cool down a bit, consult with attorneys, or even proceed under the more formal Rule 42B, you know, the one with the hearing and all that. The point being, Summary contempt should be like the absolute last resort, you know, only when any delay would really undermine the court's authority, like seriously damage its ability to function.
So it's not just about a judge feeling personally disrespected. It's got to be a genuine threat to the court itself.
Exactly. And it's important to realize that this McCormick case, it didn't invent some whole new legal theory. What it did was reinforce the existing standards for when summary contempt is the right move.
So for all the future lawyers out there, is there a takeaway, like a test they can use to figure this out?
Well, the court didn't give a numbered list or anything, but you can see a three-part test in their reasoning, and it's a test that everyone involved in the legal system should know. First, was the behavior so over the top and immediately disruptive that the court had to act right then and there to keep things under control? Second, were there other less extreme ways to handle the situation? And third, did the person accused of contempt get at least those minimum due process rights met? If the answer to any of those is no, well, summary contempt probably wasn't the right move.
So to make it super concrete, are there examples of where summary contempt was the right call, like where it was upheld?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Imagine a lawyer, like literally chucking chairs across the courtroom, or a witness who just flat out refuses to answer questions, even after a judge orders them to. Or a defendant who starts screaming obscenities and won't stop, bringing everything to a halt. Those are the kinds of situations where the disruption is clear, it's immediate, and it's ongoing. The court in McCormick was basically saying that a single kind of ambiguous gesture after the main event was already over, well, that just doesn't rise to that same level of immediate threat.
Makes sense. So wrapping all this up, what are the really important points our listeners, especially those future lawyers, should take away from McCormick?
Well, for those of you who might become judges one day, this is a big reminder. Before you jump straight to summary contempt, you really need to think. Is immediate action truly necessary to maintain control? If there's even a little bit of breathing room to consider other options, using Rule 42B, the more formal process, that's almost always the better choice, legally and ethically. And even if you do think summary contempt is warranted, you got to be super clear about what the person did that was contemptuous and give them a chance to respond, even if it's brief.
And what about for those who might be challenging a contempt finding on appeal? Any advice based on McCormick?
For you appellate folks, McCormick gives you some strong ammo. When you're arguing, focus on that three-part test we talked about. Was it truly an immediate disruption? Were there other ways to handle it? Was due process followed, at least the basics? Also, remember what the court said. Preserving dignity alone, that's not a good enough reason to skip due process and go straight to summary contempt. There has to be a real immediate threat to how the court operates.
So we're not saying people can just act out in court with zero consequences.
Right, absolutely not. It's about finding that balance, that sweet spot between a judge's authority and an individual's rights, even when things get heated in the courtroom. McCormick, it's like a guardrail. It helps prevent judges from overstepping their bounds while still recognizing that courts need tools to maintain order and make sure the legal process works the way it should. For everyone who'll be working in the courts, whether as a lawyer, a judge, or something else, understanding this balance, that's crucial. It's how we uphold the core values of our legal system.
This has been, like, really eye-opening. Yeah. So much to consider. As we wrap up on McCormick, here's a final thought for everyone. Given everything we've discussed, how do these same ideas apply to virtual courtrooms? That's becoming more and more common. And the rules, how we define disruption, how judges respond, it's all still being figured out. Lots to think about as we move forward. Thanks for diving deep with us today.